Hello, hello, welcome to the Exchange Podcast, a platform for dialogue that moves South Africa and the rest of Africa forward. My name is Sam Kokeli. In this episode, we talk to Tito Mboweni, Governor Tito Mboweni, former Minister of Labour Tito Mboweni, former Finance Minister Tito Mboweni. It's an exit interview, effectively. We talk about his time as Finance Minister. We go back to his time when he was Labour Minister in the Nelson Mandela administration. We talk about life on the mountain in Mahobasklouf, fascinating things, and what his life is like now that he's facing retirement or a re-entry into the private sector. Welcome to the Exchange Podcast.
So, I mean, the question that you asked me was in two parts. One, my short time in government, how was it? So, secondly, what am I thinking about doing going forward? And thirdly, what is life like on the mountain?
I think that's what you...
Yep. Now, let's start with the first one. My temporary return to the government. You might recall that in 1994, I was a Minister of Labour in President Mandela's cabinet, which was a very interesting thing, working with old people, with legends like Madiba, Joe Slovo, and others, Alfred Nzo, Mike Maharaj, others. It was a different level of engagement and debate and discussion. And between 1994 until the adoption of the new constitution, we had a government of national unity. So the contest for ideas and perfection of administrative mechanisms and so on was very high. We're in high competition. And although it was our first experience to be in government, nevertheless, we were able to quickly acclimatize ourselves to government and be able to push through a process of change. So we had the ANC, the National Party, and the IFP primarily in the government of national units and in a competitive political space. Then I left the government and became advisor to the governor of the South African Reserve Bank in 1998, and used the time to learn about the world. Learn about the world. Because as advisor to the governor, I was not yet the governor, but an advisor to them. So use that time to acclimatize myself with central banking and visited with many central banks around the world, and really felt at home, and I enjoyed central banking even before I became a central banker. You know, I recall my first meeting with Alan Greenspan. So he says to me, "You look so young and innocent. I said, yes, I'm young, but I'm not sure that I'm innocent, but I'm young. He said, now that you're joining central banking, you need to look much older and wiser. So I said, how do I look older and wiser? He says, that's what central banking does to you. You're going to look older and wiser. You can't look young in central banking. You must look wiser. And then he gave me a book entitled The Purposes and Functions of the Federal Reserve System. He said, if you read this and you understand it, you're done with central banking. It's finished. Because it will bring back some of the things which they taught you at university. But they, at the university, they didn't teach you the really quite the thing about money and banking. But this is what it should. And the rest is history. I spent 11 years in the central bank. Then, after completing my term in the central bank government, then I went on a cooling off period, as I was saying earlier. And then I joined the private sector. And I enjoyed the bit about the relationship between executive management and the boards of directors. Because then it was about governance, making the business to work and make money and also relate to society and so on. And I really had a good time in the private sector. I really enjoyed it. And obviously I had to agree to the request from the president to join the government again in October 2018 after the sudden resignation of Nene, who I think is a good man, by the way. You know, he fell on his sword on a matter that he felt he had ethical questions. Many people don't fall on their swords, but he did. You know, I have great respect for that man. So, but the arrangement that I had with the president was that I would be there for a short period, not for long. Now, that short period became too long, and I began to protest and kept on saying to him, but you need to let me go. As we agreed, I was not going to be here for long. Now, the difference between the cabinet of 1994 and the current cabinet is that, firstly, the 1994 cabinet was a government of national unity, was a coalition government. This one, it's a coalition government of a special kind. Why do I say that? Because it's the ANC and the Good Party. It's two parties in the government, actually. And they're cooperating throughout the government system. Cabinet, parliament, local authorities, da da da. That's, so, in fact, there's a coalition government already in South Africa.
Interesting that you see it that way. I only see there's a coalition of the tripartite alliance already.
Mm.
That alone brings in the coalition element. COSATU, SACP.
No. It's a coalition between the ANC and the Good Party.
Okay.
The cabinet, parliament, they always vote together in parliament. The municipal councils and everything else. In fact, you can extend that coalition to include the NFP.
Okay.
NFP, ANC, Good, Al-Jamaa, and so on. It's a block together.
Okay.
In all these structures, they work together. If Al-Jamaa, for example, had more members of parliament, I think one of them should have been co-opted into the cabinet.
Yeah, okay.
Because they always vote with the ANC.
Wow.
And the NFP.
Yeah.
Always. And then we've got Good, obviously. So, and from time to time, the IFP also votes with the ANC. So, I'm saying the situation is different, but I think we could have had more younger ministers to balance the experience of the older ministers and the inexperience of the new ministers, and to help to grow the new younger ministers. So my view would have been that there should have been a kind of a 60-40 split, 60 of the young people and 40 of the older ministers. I think that would have been good for me, but I'm not the president, but that's what I suggested. There are a number of deficiencies in the current state administration. One of them is that we have a number of directors general who don't have much experience, and yet they're at the apex of state administration. That results in all kinds of weaknesses. That's the first thing. Second thing, there's a tendency by ministers that when they assume office, they must appoint a new director general. I think that's the biggest weakness in the system. The consequence of which is that you've got many directors general who have no experience. And when the ministers move from one portfolio to the other, they create a problem because the new minister also wants their own director general. So the system of a professional civil service is very important. What in the Commonwealth countries, they refer to them as permanent secretaries. It's very important. So whichever minister changes, the permanent secretary must stay for continuity, for experience, and everything else. So that's my observation. What are my disappointments? My disappointments are that, one, I think local government is collapsing before our eyes. Very serious problem, which needs to be dealt with. Secondly, there's an endemic system of corruption in the state system, which needs to be dealt with and sorted. And fourthly, the poor performance of the economy as a result currently of the COVID situation, but also pre-COVID, because we did not address the required structural adjustments, structural reforms, which would have helped at least to push the economy going forward. So what am I going to do now to answer the last question? Somewhere towards the end of October, November, I'll start finalizing my thinking process about what to do, some of which are things that we're talking about with Caesar. I think that advisory thing will be very, he's going to shout at me. Don't shout, please.
No. I like you when you do this.
That's a Jewish offer.
Sure. He's like
the eatless man in this world. He doesn't eat.
So I think, for example, it would be good to work on something on the advisory for local government. I think it's missing. Either through a university or some kind of institute. You know? There's things which are practical and bring changes to people's lives. So something to think about, and I'll think about Mboweni Brothers Investment Holdings with my brother, who you met yesterday, I think. So we'll be looking at what we need to do. Our biggest problem always is going to be access to capital. You know, without finance capital, you cannot do anything. So that will be our challenge, but we'll work on that. And I see Mboweni Brothers as an important instrument for my private sector activity. So not just to be a member of boards of directors, but to be involved in actual business activity. I mean, he's going to run the thing, but I'll be there to support him and so on. And and bring other expertise on board. But that thought process is, I think, will start being concluded in October, November, okay, as my self-imposed cooling off period comes to an end.
Okay.
So that's what, in short, well, not in short, in detail, that's what is our exit interview.
So from December, you then move away from Parliament?
Yeah. As of now, end of December basically will be my cutoff point. If not end of December, then mid-January.
Okay. So how do we introduce this cooling off period officially into our politics? And
No, it's very simple. The Department of Public Service and Administration must develop the policy document and they take it to cabinet. Cabinet adopts and then it becomes...
So what was your high point in the finance ministry?
I don't think there was any low or high point. It's continuous struggle to serve our people. With many disappointments, of course, in terms of the failure of the local government financial system, which resulted in the courts of law forcing the government to take over certain municipalities, like the Liqua municipality, or disappointment when Clover decided to that they're moving their operations from Lichtenberg to Durban because of the failure of the local municipality. That has been very disappointing. The corruption has been very disappointing. But there were highlights as well. Maybe that's what you want me to say. You know, I think our response to the coronavirus was maybe initially heavy-handed, but we had to do that to bring to the attention of the population that there was a problem at hand. And in the process, we learned how to manage the process because we had not experienced this before. We started off by even telling people what type of shoes they could buy and so on, but and whether they can smoke cigarettes or not, is all, you know, so on and so on. And we've learned throughout the period how to manage the virus. So,
what was it like in that cabinet meeting when these things are being processed in there and you see this is heavy-handed or this is a bad idea? What's it like?
No, you naturally raise your point or view. And it gets debated, and eventually the majority position prevails. And not all of us got our way in the cabinet, but we debated the issues, and eventually a broad consensus is reached, and that's how it operates. I think it works well in that cabinet decisions are taken mostly based on recommendations from cabinet subcommittees. And those at least are written out, they're clear. You can see paragraph A, 2, you know. So the decision is not ambiguous. It's very clear. You might not agree with it, but that's a consensus position. Because this is not like holding your family meeting at home where you are the induna, you know. You have to debate and discuss the issues. And then eventually a position is agreed to. My criticism, though, of the cabinet system is that the cabinet meetings are too long. Could be shorter.
Typically, how long is too long?
Oh, no. When I was chairman of a board, for example, we'll start, say, at 9 o'clock, and by 1 o'clock, we'll be done. Cabinet, you can start at half past 8. And sometimes by 4 o'clock, you're still on it. I think that the president and deputy president must think about a way to shorten the length of time that is dedicated to cabinet meetings. Okay. And encourage people really to be precise and short to the point.
Okay.
I think that will help.
So how difficult was the SAA conversation?
Well, my position on SAA is well known. Conversations were very difficult. And, well, again, whatever the case is, the majority position is the one that held the day. I still don't agree with them. And I think that we could have handled the matter differently. But the majority position was what it was, and but it was very difficult. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, life on the mountain. You gave me a phrase yesterday about God lives here. Could you just expand on that? How beautiful this place is.
No, I tried to explain to you, for example, the sub-regional economy of the mountain. Timber plantation, sawmills. We've got two small breweries here, Zwakala, and a gin production business. Then we have travel and tourism, lodges, chalets. We've got a major hotel here, the Mahomasloof Hotel, and the Mahomasloof Lodge down the road. And so, and then a number of restaurants, Mountain Cafe, Iron Crown, Red Plate, Eatery, and so on. Then other agricultural activities, blueberry plantations, kiwi plantations, and so on. And now, in a big way, avocado plantations are coming on board, which will start providing the avocados probably in the next 7 to 10 years on the mountain. So it's a huge economic activity. And then there's this private school here, Stanford College. Then there's Apple School. So this all create a kind of ecosystem around. But I think the environment, the beautiful environment, it's a bit very, very cold in the evenings though, but I like that kind of cold environment. And the green, the scenery is absolutely wonderful, and it's peaceful. And when people go around here for their business very peacefully, and it's clean. It's a clean environment. A clean environment because people take care of the environment. They don't see lots of dirt and things thrown around here. We look after the environment ourselves. We make sure that the city council collects the rubbish in the plastic bags or whatever once a week. When you walk around, you see something that a can of beer that has been thrown away or something. You pick it up. You don't wait for anybody to do it. We do it ourselves.
Okay.
And we keep the environment clean. We look after part of the nature reserve, which the government has forgotten that it belongs to the government. And we'll look after it. We have an association, there's a Rotary Club here. I'm an honorary member of the Rotary Club. The Rotary Club also looks after the environment, promote tourism. We have a residence association that looks after the area. it's just a good place to live.
Oh.
And then, obviously, because of the COVID environment, I had to set up the proper office at home, where I've got three Wi-Fi services. When one is down, the other picks up. So I could function properly from here. Like most people have been functioning from home anyway.
Yeah.
So we have about five waterfalls here, which provide the most beautiful scenery. The biggest one being the Dibengeni waterfall down the road. So yeah, I think God lives here.
Beautiful.
How do the locals relate to you and the visitors to you
around here? Who do they see in you? What do they see?
Well, I think the local people are just very friendly. And as I say, being part of the Rotary Club as well is helpful. So they think there's another good citizen who has come to live on the mountain. And we've got lots of people coming to visit us, because I think one of the things that I've managed to do is to do what I call soft marketing for the area. So there's lots of people, for example, who come to Mountain Cafe and they're quite certain that they might meet me, which actually more often than not, they're correct. And so on. So,
okay. So somebody would have a substantial interest in meeting you and...
Yeah, so now the last 200, you took them to market, I think, on Wednesday.
Okay.
So next week he's going to restock.
Okay, okay.
Another 200 of those small ones.
Yeah.
They take about 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And out.
Yeah. What do they take 4 months? Is it organic kind of, or?
I don't know. I think that's how they grow.
Okay.
Yeah, because you have to feed them and...
Yeah.
Also, have to make sure that they are so we have to put some medical some tablets and
okay
so in their water,
yeah, all right, yeah,
so that they don't get sick.
Okay, okay,
so
yeah.
So to look after them, it's a very simple thing, because I said to my nephew, you know. Yeah, I built a big chicken run. You have no business being on the 350 rand queue. You absolutely no business. Because each chicken he sells it for about $80.
Mm.
So even if he sells 10 of them,
yeah,
already.
It's $800.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
From chickens. And this is what I think we should be doing. Creating this small and micro business activities for our people to earn a living and not be dependent on the social welfare.
How big an issue?
Like, for example, fish farming.
Mm.
Yeah? To teach our young people how to do basic fish farming.
Yeah.
Creating ponds where you grow fish, then you can sell the fish. You know? Instead of spending 29 billion rand on welfare, we should be spending 29 billion rand buying tractors so that in each district, there are tractors which can help people to work the land. That's money better spent. And giving dignity back to our people. You know? And you have to give dignity back to our people. And you get dignity by working and not by social welfare.
How big an issue is this social welfare spread in South Africa when we pay almost 20 million grants every month? There's a new grant which you are responsible for, the 350 grant, you signed off on that one in your time as finance minister. Are you concerned about South African future? In the sense of the dependency or the need for these grants, and that they are necessary because there's so much poverty.
I lived in England for a while, and I saw how the dole system impacted negatively on British society. We should be encouraging the entrepreneurial spirit. So you find these young men and young women washing cars. We should be maybe subsidizing them to improve their facility. That's more entrepreneurial support of business activity. We should, in fact, as a matter of urgency, promote and encourage and support agricultural activities. Like these chickens things I was talking about. This is so basic. You know, we grow spinach, for example, on our property. And now it grows widely, by the way. It's wild now. We don't have to get seeds anymore. The seeds, they produce the seeds themselves now.
Oh.
And then they spread all around. Once they start germinating, all we have to do is pick them up, put them in rows and so on. Kimroho already. And then we've got sheep, which I didn't know that sheep multiply so fast. They multiply all the time. We need to get rid of them on a regular basis. Chickens we spoke about, and chilies. We also grow chilies. And we sell the chilies here, green chilies, to the restaurants around. And, you know, and it says, I said to my nephew, this is what you do. And from time to time, when you made a bumper harvest, please just give me a little bit of the money.
Yeah.
But the rest, keep it for yourself to recycle the production process. It's doable. As I said, if I see you on that 350Q, we're going to be in serious difficulties.
And the talk of the basic income grant?
Well, I think that's something that Minister Godongwana will have to deal with. And since I don't want to rule from the grave, let me not comment about it.
Principles to you are. Okay. So, the fear of South Africa really falling apart in the next couple of years due to the poorly performing economy, unemployment, and the potential uprising. How do you see all of those things?
I don't think the country is going to fall apart. I don't think the country is going to fall apart. I think South Africa, fortunately, is based on very strong, on a very strong struggle history. There are many people who struggle so much for this country who will not allow it to fall apart. They marched in their thousands and millions over the years, so they won't let it fall apart. That's one. Two, we have negotiated and adopted a very strong constitution which guarantees certain institutional capacities and capabilities, and those institutions will not allow the country to fall apart, whether it's the judicial system. And remember that as part of the judicial system are so many law firms and so many law faculties at universities. It's a whole system of NGOs, of law firms. They will never allow the country to collapse. Then you've got other institutions. You've got chambers of commerce for business, business for leadership, South Africa, the Agri-Forum, whether you like them or not, Solidarity, got a strong trades union movement, and so on. So, nah, it's kind of wonderful. The the institutional arrangements for South Africa are so strong that they will withstand most of the pressures which might come upon our country. It's very strong. I mean, if we don't like a particular government decision, we take it to court. There are very few countries where you see that kind of thing. Very strong non-governmental organizations, non-profit organizations, whether it's about defense of the constitution, whether it's about it's very strong military, our defense force. No. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging to get you. What do you think, though, of the we young country population, median age points to a young population. Will they always speak like you do and have the same conviction you do about people who are committed to this country and struggle so much, or will they want to discuss these issues in a different manner? As you saw, the fees must fall. The younger generation seems to be a bit more impatient.
Yeah, but then that's when my 60-40 ratio comes in. In all institutions of the state, at the universities, the older professors must interact with the younger professors. In the legal firms, everywhere else, that integration. And our biggest challenge is the unemployed youth. And that's why the point I'm making about us focusing more on employment and business opportunities for them is very, very important. But they must take responsibility. The other institution, by the way, I forgot to mention, which is supportive of our society, is the church and religious organizations. Very, very strong. Very strong.
Thank you. Thank you, Dido Mboweni, Governor Mboweni, for being a great host in Makgoba's Kloof and taking us through your thinking and life on the mountain.